From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Ariel Pink is here with us on Soundcheck today. The LA-based singer-songwriter made waves 2 years ago with a record called Mature Themes, and fans have been waiting to see what he'll do next. Well, now we'll find out when Ariel Pink and his band debut some brand new songs right here on Soundcheck. Also, the writer Sari Botten edited the book Goodbye to All That, Writers on Loving and Leaving New York. Her new anthology has a lot less leaving and a lot more loving as musicians, artists, and writers share what they love about New York. Now, what about you? Do you love America? Because 3 weeks from today, we're supposed to be heading to the polls. Now, if you thought you were going to sit this midterm election out, well, rapper Lil Jon would like to encourage you to think again. Yes, Lil Jon is saying, turn out for what? And you can watch a star-studded cast answer that question in this new video. It's part of the Rock the Vote campaign, and it's on our website, soundcheck.org. Now look, we all vote with the best of intentions, but sometimes we turn out for what? For a person who may not be suited to the job. A new play called Tailspin looks at four political careers gone horribly and hilariously wrong. It's the work of our occasional contributor, Mario Correa. It's currently playing off Broadway. Mario, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
So it's not a musical, but as we will see, there is a lot of kind of music in this political cesspool that you have waded into. Tailspin is about the downfall of four real-life politicians. Remind us who they are.
So Senator Larry Craig, who was caught trying to solicit sex in an airport men's room in Minneapolis.
The wide stance.
The wide stance, indeed. Congressman Mark Foley, who was IMing the underage pages as he was the chairman of the Committee on Missing and Exploited Children. Anthony Weiner, whom we all know from the famous hacked photo, quote unquote. and Mark Sanford, who supposedly hiked the Appalachian Trail in Argentina. So, yeah. So Tailspin is a verbatim recreation of those four scandals using only their actual texts, words, police reports, etc.
Okay. And how, I mean, there is a musical moment in your play.
Oh, it starts with a musical moment because when I was digging into the transcripts of these scandals and finding out things about them, I came across a moment of Senator Larry Craig serenading Judge Alito, not yet Justice Alito. He'd been recently named by President Bush, and he started singing, Alito, I just met a judge named Alito. Now, to the tune of West Side Story's Maria. Keep in mind, this is the same senator who is telling us he is not gay and not soliciting sex in bathrooms, but he's serenading Judge Alito at the time to the tune of West Side Story.
So that seems to be that kind of moment. That seems to have spawned everything that we are about to talk about now, which is singing politicians.
Right. What could be better than a politician? A singing politician.
So as it turns out, Senator Larry Craig was not the only singing senator.
Oh, no. In fact, you know, it's funny, sort of diving into this, how many singing and performing politicians there have been. Yeah. So Senator Craig was one of the members of the singing senators, a foursome that also included then Majority Leader Trent Lott, Jim Jeffords, a senator from Vermont, and John Ashcroft, who was a Missouri senator and then, of course, our attorney general. These guys formed a barbershop quartet. They first performed at a birthday party for Bob Packwood, the senator who was kicked out for basically harassing women. So it started well and just got better, basically, John.
So dubious sideline activities aside, how were they musically?
Oh, I mean, just fantastic. I mean, they were really the Beatles of Capitol Hill.
How fantastic were they? Let's listen.
My heart's on fire, Elvira. Giddy up. Oompa, oompa, pa, mau, mau. Giddy up. Oompa, oompa, pa, mau, mau. High, old silver.
So not quite a cappella. There's a little keyboard going on in the back there. But
yeah, a little synth right. going on.
Right.
Yeah,
those are the singing senators. Where does that come from? What was that?
That was an Oak Ridge Boys song, Elvira. And they really love the Oak Ridge Boys canon. They seem to be very fond of it. They also used to do the Oak Ridge Boys' American Made. We actually do recreate that song in our play, too. The funny thing is that they would perform, you know, and sometimes with the Oak Ridge Boys, in fact. And then years later, when Senator Jim Jeffords switched from the Republican to the Democratic Party, they kicked him out and tried to perform without him. And he would, like, hunt them down in the Capitol and try to perform with them. And it was sort of the typical breakup, you know.
With the Democratic Party cast in the role of Yoko.
Yeah, exactly. And they actually did become a threesome as a result for a little while. And then Senator Larry Craig's bathroom incident sort of meant the end of the singing senators.
More about the bathroom incident and its fallout in Mario Correa's play called Tailspin. That's two words, each followed by an exclamation point, because there's lots of good stuff packed into the play, which runs through November 30th at the Lynn Redgrave Theater. Mario Correa often joining us here on Soundcheck to be a part of our series That Was a Hit. There was a kind of a hit.
Oh, yeah.
For at least one of these singing politicians.
Yeah, you know, it's a very unusual hit. So I was looking actually at my Billboard's book of top 40 hits, you know, the famous one that we all love. And right under Dire Straits was Senator Everett Dirksen. And I thought, what is this? Turns out he had a number 29 hit. Back in 1967, it was a spoken word hit called Gallant Men. It was actually his album went to number 16 on the pop charts, and he had four albums, but he won a Grammy for this one. So Gallant Men, weirdly, and you'll hear it, I'm sure, in a second, was written by Charlie Osgood from CBS Sunday Morning, who at the time was in the Army Band and would basically write this song under his given name, which was Charles Wood. So lots of strange connections to politics and news still today, but he was essentially the oldest person at the time to have a top 40 hit.
And he was a senator.
Yeah, sitting senator.
Republican from Illinois.
From Illinois, minority leader.
Senator Everett McKinley Dirksen with Gallant Men.
Down through the years, there have been men, brave, gallant men, who have died that others might be free. And even now, they do it still. Brave, gallant men, know that someone must, and so they will.
Mario Correa, that was a hit.
That was a hit. That was a number 29 hit. And if you like that, you'll love his Pledge of Allegiance and his Gettysburg Address, also on that album, the Gallant Men album.
But wait, there's more from Senator Everett McKinley Dirksen. Gallant Men is the name of the song. 1967, height of the Vietnam War. I mean,
exactly.
If he'd cut that two years later, he may not have made number 19, but or 29 or whatever it was. But that's not the only instance of a singing politician making it outside the halls of the House or the Senate and into the public consciousness. To come back to one of the singing senators we were talking about a few minutes ago, John Ashcroft.
Oh, yeah, John Ashcroft. Of course, once the band has sort of broken up, he tried his hand at a solo career. And he really immortalized this song, or maybe John Stewart did, because we've seen it sort of in late-night TV a lot. But Let the Eagle Soar is a fantastic little ditty penned by Senator John Ashcroft. He performed it in several places. And it was performed, in fact, at George Bush's second inauguration, not on the actual stage. But during the festivities. And I mean, what can I tell you about Let the Eagle Soar that the song can't tell itself? It's something else, isn't it?
Well, now this is a live recording at a theological seminary by John Ashcroft, and this is his greatest hit called Let the Eagle Soar.
This eagle's place is in the sky. She's still got a lot of flying to do. You can see it in her eye. Though she's cried a bit for what we've put her through, she soared above the lifted lamp that guards sweet freedom's door. In the dews, the damps, the watchfires of a nation torn by war. Oh, she's far too young to die. You can see it in her eye. She's not yet begun to fly. It's time to let the mighty eagle soar once more.
Mario, make it stop.
Now, I'm no musician, John, but was it me or did it feel like there were about 37 extra syllables in some of those lines? Like, he certainly hasn't gotten the idea that, like, a line needs a certain number of beats and rhythm.
So let the eagle soar. John Ashcroft, senator, attorney general, singer, songwriter, recorded live, and the video for this is everything you would want.
Yeah, everything you'd expect. Yeah. It meets expectations.
Mario Correa is host of SiriusXM's Entertainment Weekly Radio and writer of the off-Broadway political comedy called Tailspin, playing through November 30th at the Lynn Redgrave Theater. I want to make clear that most of the people that we're hearing about in their musical settings here are not the do-batters who are covered in the play, with
right.
the exception of Senator Larry Craig, who is one of the so-called singing senators. We do still have a senator in Congress right now who is a singer, a songwriter with a number of records to his credit.
Senator Orrin Hatch, yeah, has been basically a longtime musician. Funny enough, he actually used to manage a Mormon band, I guess you would call it, back in the day, back in the 60s and 70s, but then continued as a songwriter and has written lots of songs and performed sometimes, but most of the time he's just the writer on it.
Right,
and he has
a
partner named Janice Cap Perry, who apparently is quite big in Mormon singing circles or performing circles. Yeah, and My God Is Love is his big one. And by big, I mean not very big, but you know what I'm saying.
So this song called America Rocks comes from Senator Orrin Hatch's album, Heal Our Land. That is a song written by Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican of Utah. America Rocks.
It does.
I'm so glad he chose to sit this one out and leave it to the kids to sing lines like America's totally cool, is totally hot.
Very controversial, isn't it?
Would have been a little unseemly for Senator Orrin Hatch to be using that kind of kid lingo, you know?
Well, you know what's funny, too, is like we're seeing a theme here. The theme is America good, melody and rhythm not so good. Yeah, so we're seeing that.
Well,
as
but, you know, that at least is, I mean, a professionally produced recording.
Yes, and he has. In fact, he is, you know, an actual songwriter who has royalties to his name. He's had some success.
So Mario Correa with us on Soundcheck, talking about what happens when the music and political worlds spill into each other. It's not a very big Venn diagram, but
thankfully,
you know, there are some. And we've been talking about politicians who then make music. There is, of course, the reverse. There are musicians
right.
who've gotten themselves elected to Congress.
Absolutely. There's two that really jump off the page. The first is the only congressman to have had a number one hit, and that was Sonny Bono, who, as part of Sonny and Cher, of course, had I Got You, Babe, and many other songs, but that
right.
was his number one hit. And he was a performer way before he was elected to Congress in the 90s. And then John Hall, who was one of the founding members of the band Orleans, of Still the One fame,
right.
who served. In fact, he represented just the Hudson Valley here in New York State and had a run for a couple terms as a congressman as well and is no longer in office. Yeah.
And then there's Louisiana Governor Jimmy Davis, who wrote You Are My Sunshine.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't even think of that one.
And, you know, there's There's a few other. I mean, in Australia, you have Peter Garrett, who was the lead singer of Midnight Oil and became a very powerful minister in the government. There are occasionally, you'll see musicians get elected to local Congress seats or mayoralties or whatever. So it's not unheard of.
No, there's a lot. You know, there's a lot of performing, I think, in politics. You sort of perform for a crowd all the time. And I really do think it's sort of the next step in some levels. I remember reading that Dianne Feinstein wanted to be a dancer and ended up being a California senator. So, you know, she got her second wish.
And the characters in Tailspin, your play about politicians who've gone to seed, I mean, are they just... Were they just performing, you know, for the wrong crowd?
That's right. I think they thought they were performing really to an audience of one and ended up performing to an audience of millions. And that's what goes wrong. Now, with the singing politicians that we were just talking about, they unfortunately wanted to perform to an audience of millions, but maybe should have performed just an audience of one.
When politics meets music and things go horribly wrong, plays like Tailspin result. Mario Correa's play is running at the Lynn Redgrave Theater through November 30th. Mario, great to see you again.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
That's the band Orleans and their hit, Still the One. New York Democrat John Hall left his congressional seat in 2012 to spend more time touring with the band. Up next, a conversation with writer Sari Botten about the musicians whose love for New York means they can never leave it behind. Her new book is called Never Can Say Goodbye, Writers on Their Unshakable Love for New York. And we'll hear from her in just a minute, and then later, stick around for live music from Ariel Pink and his band. All of that coming up on Soundcheck.
Never can.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. A few years ago, Sari Botten edited an anthology called Goodbye to All That, Writers on Loving and Leaving New York. Well, turns out you never can say goodbye, as an old song once said. In fact, that's the title of a new collection of essays that Sari has compiled. Never Can Say Goodbye, Writers on Their Unshakable Love for New York. Sari, welcome back to our New York studio.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So is this, I mean, you say in the opening of the book, this basically is an attempt to clarify your position on New York from the last book.
That was part of the impetus. I was very upset that not many people, but some people had this assumption that the first book was a collection of 28 anti-New York City screeds, which it absolutely was not and is not. It was a, you know, a collection of love letters mostly. But yeah, that was a part of it. I really wanted to set the record straight. And also, I was realizing that, you know, even if you've left New York, pretty good chance you still feel like a New Yorker if you've lived here long enough.
So in the first book, one of the 28 writers was you. We heard of your tale of woe, of real estate woe here in New York, being forced out of New York, moving upstate to the Hudson Valley. But in this edition now, we get your kind of updated life situation, which is you're still upstate, but you still love New York.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, how it feels to be a New Yorker in, say, Kingston or Hudson or, you know, any of the other cities along the Hudson River these days.
Well, I have a lot of conversations with people about this, not only upstate, but even in New York City. It's very rare for people to be able to live in New York City their entire lives. Circumstances or, you know, just the need to get out often make people feel like they have to leave. But I think that New York changes you irreversibly. And so people who have lived here, they feel like they're still New Yorkers. And a lot of people come back. I was talking to a guy last night who had left for San Francisco for a few years, but he had to come back.
Mm. Now, that's a different thing.
Right.
When you come back from San Francisco, you have to come back and stay back.
Exactly.
You're 2 hours away. You can get in the car and come back for a day.
And I do. Mm-hmm. And I do. I do it.
Do you still keep a Metro card?
I do. I keep a Metro card. And I'm not wearing it today, but I have a token that I wear on a chain often, a subway token.
Okay.
I still feel like a New Yorker very much.
Well, a lot of the authors in this collection, yourself among them, one of the recurring themes is the sense of when you do leave, if you do leave, that sense of having left something behind that you can't take with you. And for you, it seems like that is wrapped up in a Liza Minnelli song.
Yes, it is a Liza Minnelli song that I sang at Baby Grand, my favorite karaoke bar on Lafayette Street the other night. A song I've been singing since I was 12 years old and the movie New York, New York came out.
So what is it about City Lights? What does this say to you about the condition of being a New Yorker out of New York?
Well, it's a story song about an old lady who lives in the country who misses New York City. And it's very corny, and it has really funny stuff like sties and stables sure are smelly. Let me sniff some kosher deli. And you know, when I was 12, I didn't realize it was corny, but it's really about you know, there's no place like New York.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "It's nice to meet someone who appreciates the beauty that nature initiates. It's sweet to hear. But we, my dear, I'm truly bored. I miss those city lights. Those sparkling city lights, those twinkling city lights, blurring my eyes. I love those city nights, the color of city sights that shine under city lights, tinting the skies. A new
Liza Minnelli singing City Lights, something my guest, the author Sari Botten, has been known to do at karaoke joints from time to time. Sari is the author of the book Goodbye to All That, Writers on Loving and Leaving New York, and now the new volume called Never Can Say Goodbye, Writers on Their Unshakable Love for New York. In your essay, you mention Maggie Estep.
Yes.
And, in fact, the book is dedicated to her. For folks who don't know her, she was sort of like, you know the story of the blind men with the elephant, one's holding the trunk and the other the tail, and they all think they are holding something different? She was one of those people where I knew her from horse racing.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. You know, we worked on a volume of stories about thoroughbred racing.
Really?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. But tell me your Maggie Estep story.
I'm getting a little choked up. Maggie Estep was someone that I idolized. I didn't know her when I was living in the East Village, but I would see her around. And I was also freelancing at MTV News. And so, you know, I was just very aware of who she was. She was this performance artist, poet, a slam poet, also musician. And I had caught her at a little jazz club called Deanna's, owned by the wonderful jazz singer Deanna Kirk. And they had a Sunday poetry thing, and I saw her there, and I would see her around, and I just thought she was so brave, and she didn't care what you thought about her. And then years later, I saw her in Kingston. I'm part of a nonprofit called TMI Project. We do moth-style story slams. And on the sign-up list, it said Maggie Estep, and I was like, no way. And it was that Maggie Estep. So I invited her to contribute to Goodbye to All That when I found out that she had left New York also, and also that she had written 7 novels. I knew none of this.
Yeah.
And I started to get to know her, and then she did a reading for the book on February 7th in Rhinebeck, and then February 10th, she dropped dead.
Yeah.
And I...
Completely unexpected.
Yeah.
She was 50.
50.
So she was, for you, as a young, as a neophyte New Yorker, she was the New Yorker you aspired to be.
I wasn't a neophyte New Yorker. I mean, I grew up on Long Island, but I had been living in the city a little while, and I was very insecure. I feel like a lot of people come to New York City to reinvent themselves, mm-hmm. especially nerds. You know? And I was looking for a way to feel more secure and cool, and there was this person who was secure, cool, feminist. I write in my piece that it wasn't until I saw her video for Hey Baby, in which she taunts a
cat caller.
Yeah. It had never occurred to me to feel anything but flattered when I was faced with a cat caller, and I was like, oh, right. So... yeah, she was a person that I wanted to be like.
Yeah.
I admired her. I envied her. Yeah.
So Maggie Estep, the late Maggie Estep, passed away earlier this year. She did contribute an essay to Sari Bottin's first anthology explaining why she moved upstate, which must have made you feel good.
Oh, my God.
Most new, iconic of New Yorkers for you moved upstate as well.
Oh, yeah. I was like, okay, I'm actually not uncool for moving upstate. Maggie Estep lives here. I'm good.
And this is Maggie in action. This is audio from her video of Vicious.
Vicious, you hit me with a flower. You do it every hour. Oh, baby, you're so vicious. Vicious, you want me to hit you with a stick. But all I got's a guitar pick. Oh, baby, you're so vicious. I see you walking down the street. Step on your hands and I mangle your feet. You're not the kind of person that I even want to meet. Cause you're so vicious. Oh, baby, you're so vicious. 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 Oh, baby, you're so vicious. Oh, baby, you're so vicious.
That is the late Maggie Estep and her version of Lou Reed's Vicious, which was a video that Lou Reed himself asked to be in.
I know. How cool is that?
That is very, very cool. The book is dedicated to Maggie Estep and my guest, Sari Bottin, the author and the editor of the new compilation called Never Can Say Goodbye, Writers on Their Unshakable Love for New York. Mentions Maggie in her own recounting of her tales of falling in love with New York and mixed feelings about leaving New York. Some of the other writers, Whoopi Goldberg, talks about how, you know, growing up in New York sort of shaped her view of the world.
She's
and
such a consummate
her.
New Yorker, yeah.
Yeah.
But it, yeah.
Jason Diamond talks about kvetching. I mean, you know, whether you're Jewish or not, if you grew up in New York City, you knew a whole ton of words that began with S-C-H-M.
That's true.
You know, schmuck and schmata and all that kind of stuff. And K-V words.
Right.
You know, Yiddish became...
it's New Yorkish.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
really is.
So that special kind of whining, complaining lingo that we are so proud of when...
You know, it's funny. I was out last night and somebody was telling me that he moved to San Francisco for a few years and there were these buttons that people wore there that said, "We don't care how you do it in New York." You know?
that's great.
And, you know, there's a certain, you know, arrogance that New Yorkers can tend to have.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe we're not so proud of the kvetching all the time, but we accept it as part of being a New Yorker.
It's a survival skill.
Nick Flynn entitles his contribution to your book, The Replacements. The idea that we're all just little cogs in the great wheel of New York, but that there is something, it's like the kind of human connections that make it all worthwhile.
Yeah, I love his piece. It's really, really beautiful.
And the idea that we are all replaceable?
It's true. It's that is one of the things that I feel like I want to tell people who are thinking about leaving New York, is that you can lose your place here. I know that sometimes I've felt that way. I actually am insecure about it. Like, I don't want to feel like I've lost my place here. But yeah, there's new people, there's new places. You go around and nothing is familiar. You don't know any of the restaurants, and all your friends have moved out. So there's something to that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of an obvious musical left turn to make, but The Replacements,
of course,
for Nick Flynn's article, The Replacements, a band that reformed and was recently here in New York. With I Will Dare. Nick Flynn's contribution to Sari Botten's new book is, his chapter is called The Replacements, the idea that, you know, the city stays even as we are replaced. And Sari's book is Never Can Say Goodbye, Writers on Their Unshakable Love for New York. Roseanne Cash moved here in the 90s, Sari, and she's the opening salvo in this book, where she talks about the idea of replacement, you know, that favorite places disappear new things come, and that's not always so bad.
It's true. And Jason Diamond talks about that too. His essay is a lot about loving New York by way of restaurants and food, and, you know, they change so much. You know, New York has always been changing, and you always need new things. People can't, you know, it's not static. Mm-hmm. From one day to the next.
Now, you, in addition to being a writer, you were a music writer at one point. I mean, you make music still. As one of those people in the creative world, what do you see in New York in 2014?
Oh, I mean, I don't know how you afford to live here as an artist. And I really think that what Patti Smith said in a conversation with Jonathan Lethem, that you really need to go to the other cities first.
Yeah, and she mentioned Poughkeepsie.
She sure did.
Up in the Hudson Valley.
Right near me in Kingston.
Yeah.
And more people are moving up to Kingston, where I am. I don't know how you can do your art here when you're starting out without any money and having to work so hard just to stay afloat here. I really don't know how anybody does it.
Yeah. And yet, as the subtitle of your book says, it is an unshakable love that those of us who fall in love with New York, I mean, it really sinks
true.
It hooks into you, doesn't it?
It sure does. I don't know many people who don't love it. Even if they came here and it really wasn't for them as a place to live, they still just, it really gets to you.
The book is Never Can Say Goodbye, Writers on Their Unshakable Love for New York, a follow-up to Sari Botten's first compilation called Goodbye to All That, Writers on Loving and Leaving New York. Sari, great having you back with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you
so much.
So great to be here.
New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down. New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down. Like a death of the heart. Jesus, where do I start? But you're still the one pool where I'd happily drown.
Bit of New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down from LCD Sound System. Up next, put on your spacesuit because we're traveling into some strange territory. Ariel Pink brings his dreamy, absurdist pop into our studio for a sneak peek at his new record, Pom Pom, not due out until November. But that's next on Soundcheck.
I'm Lenny from Windsor Terrace, Brooklyn, and you're listening to Soundcheck from WNYC.
There's magic in the air, the night sky that you face like a mystery left uncovered.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Ariel Pink has been making oblique and off-kilter pop music for well over a decade now, though his most visible projects have also included the moniker Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti. In November, he'll release his first record as just Ariel Pink. The album will be called Pom Pom, and Ariel's joined us in the studio today with his band to give us an early taste of what's to come. Here is Ariel Pink with a song called Dazed in Daydreams, live on Soundcheck.
I died unknown, stillborn one morning. Letters on paper, no way. At last my will is done, the picture's gone, but the memory lingers on. Farewell, this one's for you.
I used to dream.
I used to dream away, hide in the dark, let it to dry.
That is Ariel Pink and his band live on Soundcheck with a song called Dazed in Daydreams. You'll find that on the new Ariel Pink album when it comes out November 17th. Ariel's here with his band, who I will introduce you to momentarily. But Ariel Pink, welcome to Soundcheck.
How do you do?
Very well, thanks. So your last record, Mature Themes, was credited to Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti. This is just Ariel Pink, although it is clearly, I mean, you got a big band in here. This is clearly a big operation now.
Right. So, well, you know, I just like to, point out that most records that are by singer-songwriters or solo artists aren't the work of one guy. Some of them are, but not mine.
So what for you is the distinction between the Haunted Graffiti part of your career and this? Is this a new beginning of sorts?
It's a new confusion of sorts. There's some things you just can't, some sort of lines of inquiry that you can't really simplify. Like how do I pronounce your name? Ariel or Ariel? And
What do you say?
Well, I say something. The point is that I can't stop the question, and try as I might, I've always tried to explain what the difference between Haunted Graffiti or Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti was, but it only serves to complicate things, and it's just move on to the next question. It's a long, long, long story.
All right, my next question is, do you say Ariel or Ariel?
I say Ariel.
You do?
Yeah, but...
All right. Well, then I will switch over to Ariel.
Well, I didn't realize that you did that. So. Ariel is fine.
Having listened to the forthcoming record, it's got, you know, kind of a classic lo-fi sound to it, but it is also has this big, almost at times lush cinematic sound as well. So how do you walk that tightrope between kind of staying true to the lo-fi roots and at the same time doing the big produced sound?
Well, it's funny that you use the word staying true, because I don't see anything that I do as ever being lo-fi. I just see it as being sort of a tome or a tribute to the sounds of classic records, like the Beatles, which you would never consider to be lo-fi. It's just the sound of the era. And for me, it's sometimes that doesn't need an update. You don't really need to bring the new, the remastered or remade, updated version of the Beatles into today's world. We don't need to hear the MIDI versions. So I just kind of, I think that certain, I just use my ears, and whatever sounds good, certain melodic dominated music just really could use more of a, less of the backbeat, or, you know, where the drums kind of sit differently in the mix, and more of the vocals or melodic instruments in the foreground. But then there's the reverse is also true in other types of music. So
right. So aside from the Beatles, I mean, it seems like, you know, there are callbacks on this record to, I don't know, the Herman's Hermits and garage rock bands of the 60s. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all before your time. How did you come to this music? Did you grow up on it?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I pretty much have the same record collection in my mind and taste that I had when I was 20. Mm-hmm. So I just did my I broke out the Scaroofy rock and roll encyclopedia and basically just ate it all up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
So lots of classic chord progressions and things like that?
I mean, lots of, when melody was sort of still chugging along.
Still king, yeah.
Before the beat sort of just took over. And
now, one other artist who sort of came to mind listening to the record Pom Pom was Frank Zappa. I don't know if you're a Frank Zappa fan.
Who's he?
You know, if I said right now Frank Zappa was a genius, there aren't too many people who would disagree. But if I had said that back in 1982, there would have been a lot of people saying, "What, are you crazy? You know, he does all this, he does all this crazy stuff." And you know, there are songs on this record where you are definitely,
Walking
unleashing the mayhem.
Well, I mean, I don't think that really, for me, whatever people dismiss about Frank Zappa are things that I happily dismiss as well. I mean, like, the people that I know aren't it's not about his tomfoolery or like his his wackiness. It's much more about the sort of music school jazzo kind of noodling and endless kind of wanking.
That's the
term for it. That's the kind of thing that I don't need so much. I liked his the early Mother stuff because it's such a good pop. It's really, and it has this great just chordal kind of like, oh, like almost a choir. It really sounds dark. It's great. It's a huge influence.
And you know, he would just, within a single song, would like make a left turn. It would pivot from one sound world to another. You do that, you know, on occasion on this record as well. And this song you're going to do for us next called Jello, this almost has like a jingle, sort of.
I think Kim Fowley's publishing company is actually pitching it to a Jello company.
Well, let's hear the song. Ariel Pink is my guest here in the Soundcheck studio, and his band includes Joe Kennedy on guitar and keyboards, George Elbrecht on guitar, Kenny Gilmore behind the keyboard, Tim Coe on bass, Don Bowles behind our drum kit, and Piper Kaplan also on backing vocals. Almost everyone is singing at one point or another. The album will be called Pom Pom when it's out on November 17th. Here is Ariel Pink with his song Jello.
Jello, 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 Jello. Yeah. Jello, 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 Jello.
Hello.
Jello, 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 Jello.
Jello.
Jello, 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 Jello. Woo, woo. Sticky cubes of Kool-Aid action. Drooped with sky.
Jello, 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 Jello.
Jello, 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 Jello.
The strip mall is called. Can you hear the people wearing marble clothes? Vinta church steeples, mom and dad are normal. Everyone eats white, that's why they're all old.
Jello, 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 Jello. Jello, 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 Jello.
Jello,
Jello, Jello, Jello, Jello, Jello.
I
Jello.
I
acorn.
I
Jello.
Before I was in Rio, that's why I was born. I believe in reincarnation, that's why you tell it for the summer. Jared's Delicatessen down Santa Monica Boulevard. You can get the best show in town.
That is Ariel Pink and his band live on Soundcheck with their song called Jello. Once again, the next album by Ariel Pink, under his own name, not with Haunted Graffiti, just Ariel Pink, is called Pom Pom. It comes out November 17th, but Ariel and the gang giving us a sneak preview here in the Soundcheck studio today. You have a song you can play us out with?
Yeah, I think we're going to play Four Shadows. It's track 3 on the new record, and it's a little bit more, it's kind of got a Pink Floyd-y theatrical feel.
All right, let's hear the song. It's called Four Shadows, a punning title, but it's spelled F-O-U-R, as in the number, Four Shadows. Ariel Pink with the band performing live on Soundcheck.
Four shadows in lifeless from gallows of time. At last from heaven etched into dimensionless lies.
On the pillars and stacks of the dreams made of wax. Bury the afterglow. Keep your eyes on the dream. In the blue of endless freeform. Where between what's to come?
Ice is in show my pity.
The night, holy darkness in the night.
Screams at your bump in the night.
Holy darkness in the night. Holy darkness in the night.
Screams at your bump in the night.
Eclipsing the rays of the sun. Blacker than black shell is that of the lamp in the sky. Four shadows in two-dimensional space. Nothing to touch when the movie projector is me.
Shadows, the name of the song, Ariel Pink and his band live on Soundcheck. The album Pom Pom is out November 17th on the 4AD label. Ariel, to you and the gang, thanks so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
You got it.
Tomorrow on the show, we'll get another preview of a record not due until November, as the impossibly dashing Brian Ferry joins us in the studio to talk about his new album, Avonmore. And members of the Wordless Music Orchestra unveil some of their new arrangement of Tubular Bells, the jovial Mike Oldfield classic that was used to such creepy effect in the movie The Exorcist. Also, in honor of the latest Broadway revival of Leonard Bernstein's On the Town, we'll talk to an early cast member from the original show and an historian who's written a book about Bernstein, Jerome Robbins, and the other artists involved in the New York scene during the 1940s. All of that is tomorrow. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.